From Mark chapter 10, verses 35 through 45. Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him. "Teacher," they said, "we want you to do for us whatever we ask." "What do you want me to do for you?" he asked. They replied, "Let one of us sit at your right and the other at your left in glory." "You don't know what you are asking," Jesus said. "Can you drink the cup I drink, or be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with?" "We can," they answered. Jesus said to them, "You will drink the cup I drink and be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with. But to sit at my right or left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those for whom they have been prepared." When the 10 heard this, they became indignant with James and John. Jesus called them together and said, "You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as ransom for many."
Well, good morning. I'm glad you've all decided to grace us with your presence today. I just wanted Keith to know that that vapor lock is not a sign of old age, it's a sign of old technology. Because with new technology, there is no such thing as vapor lock. Well, every year in January, we, as the leaders, decide to give a State of the Congregation address. And since it usually involves numbers and dollars and cents, everybody looks at me. But this is the third year now I've done this, and really, I trick them all because I only spend a few minutes talking about numbers, and then I get to talk about the vision of the future, or the vision for the coming year, and this year, which is 2011. As I was preparing this, I looked back at what our vision was for last year, and I discovered that the congregation actually exceeded what our vision was for the year. Overall, our budget was the same for 2009 as it was for 2010. The difference was in 2009 we spent $13,000 more than we brought in. Last year we actually brought in $630 more than we spent. So that's a great change. But one of the things that we decided we were going to do was we were going to concentrate more on helping the family of God in times of trouble, times of distress. Sometimes it's financially where they need help, and we concentrated more on doing that. We didn't increase the spending on any of the buildings and grounds, the payroll, missionary support, or the office expense. We didn't spend any more. Well, we did spend more money this last year was in our Christ's Hands ministry. That ministry where we try to help the family, if they have financial trouble. Sometimes it's things like medicine, rent, those kind of things. But we've agreed to do that, and we did spend more this year. One of the additional things we did this last year was Tim Kelly, who you know is has gotten to the point where he cannot get around. The church got together, not us, but the Churches of Christ in California got together to buy him a handicap van. And the church here contributed almost $2,000 to that cause. We also spent some money on the Haitian Relief Program. And so there were lots of opportunities to give, and those needs were all met with enthusiasm. And I think this shows that the church here has the ability to give in the face of a tough economy. And we know that the economy's been kind of rough. We've had some people have lost jobs. We've had people that had to change jobs. But the family here continues to give generously to meet the needs that come up that we have the ability to address. And it's great that we can see that we have a commitment to working through the church here for the glory of God in this area. But beyond the numbers, the dollars and cents of 2010, what kind of things did we accomplish? The church here was an integral part of reintroducing the countywide youth devotionals, where we would get together with the teens from the churches in the county of Ventura. to have a celebration, to sing, to pray together. And it's been a great thing because it's wonderful when the young people get to see that there are people that believe, that have a commitment to living a godly life, a Christian life that exists outside of the four walls here. We've also seen an active young adult group spring up. We have seen greater participation and outreach to those outside of our group, and the numbers have swelled. I was going to say swollen, but that made me think about feet. And the number has swelled, and it's great because one of the great things that, as an old person, I really appreciate is the energy and the enthusiasm and willingness to think outside the box and try new things. And the young people certainly have that. Another thing that we've accomplished last year was we've begun to have Bible studies again. We have had Bible studies going on with individuals, people that have a desire to know Christ, people that desire to want to see what it's all about. And we began to have those again, and we have some conversions. So where are we headed this year? Where are we going? I chose the passage that Parker read for us from Mark 10. And he talks where Jesus says, "Whoever wants to become great among you must be a servant." If you've been around me much in the last few months, this has kind of become a big deal with me. I'm not sure why things happen the way they do, but sometimes we come across things. And I'm an avid listener of people that speak that I believe have wisdom. I'm also an avid reader. And I came across a book that was written by a JAG officer in the military. And the title of the book was called Serve to Lead. And it caught my attention because this whole idea of service is something that is, we all think we understand what service is. But the question he asked to begin the book is, who are you serving? And this is the primary question that came out through his book. And as I got to thinking about that, it makes who we are serving makes a huge impact, a huge difference in our own lives. And I think that this needs to become a key question that we ask ourselves each day as we live out our lives. It doesn't matter who we are. We could be a dad, we could be a mom, we could be a student, we could be an employee, we could be an employer. We can work for the government. We can work in the private industry. We can be a school teacher. It doesn't matter. We all have someone to serve. And I think as a nation, this is one of the challenges that we face because we have seen over the last, I don't know what the exact number of years is, but we can see that what has happened is there's a large propensity for people to serve themselves. We've seen it happen in our government. We've seen it happen in private industry. We've seen what it has done to our nation. People that have decided not to serve someone else, but to serve themselves. I think also the church nationwide shows that growth is either stagnant or declining because we have decided to serve ourselves. Mark 19:10, Jesus says, "For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost." Now, how does that fit into our idea of what it is to serve, how we should serve? In John 3:17, it says, "For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him." In Luke 24, Jesus said to them, "This is what I told you while I was still with you. Everything must be fulfilled that is written about me in the law of Moses, the prophets and the Psalms." Then he opened their minds so that they could understand the scriptures. He told them, "This is what is written. The Messiah will suffer and rise from the dead on the third day, and repentance for the forgiveness of sins will be preached in his name to all nations, beginning at Jerusalem." And then finally in Mark 16, Jesus instructs his apostles. He says, "Go into all the world and preach the gospel to all creation. Whoever believes and is baptized will be saved, but whoever does not believe will be condemned." In each of these passages, there's a service. Service is involved. It says what Jesus came to earth for. He didn't come to serve himself. He didn't come to set up a kingdom. He came to seek and to save the lost. And as the passage that Parker read points out, that if we want to be great, we need to pat ourselves on the back and we need to blow our horn and tell everybody what a good job we're doing. That's not what he said. I should have heard some boos there. He said what? He said those, if you seek to be great, you must be a servant. You must serve. So the question falls on each one of us. Who am I serving each day? Now, it's interesting that, when I remember growing up, service was a big thing. I worked at a gas station, which meant that, and I know this is foreign to some of you if you're under 30, but, you used to drive into the gas station, and you didn't get out of your car. You sat there, and the little guy, that was me, came out and said, and they said, fill it up. Of course, gas was only 75 cents a gallon, but I had to put gas in the tank. They wanted to check the oil. The big thing was to wash the window, and those little old ladies said, you missed a spot. But you learn how to serve. You learn how to treat somebody. There's I mentioned an old book that I stole from my in-laws, and it had to do with an old preacher. And one of the things he thought people should do, kids should do, is everybody should become a waiter or a waitress. Because you were put in the position of having to serve. You're put into a position of having to try to make someone else's meal enjoyable and pleasant. But how do we serve today? We don't even like to go into the bank. How many of you go into the bank? We get our paychecks put in our account. If we want to move money around, we do it online. If you want some cash, you go to the ATM. You don't even have to have any kind of an interaction with anybody. And you can buy stuff. You don't have to go to the store. You can buy it online. They deliver it to your house. Such a nice thing. And how many of you like to wait in lines? If you go to the bank and you have to go into the bank, or if you go in the supermarket and there happens to be a line, you hear grumbling. People don't like to wait in lines. We want instantaneous things to happen instantaneously. And we have things like Google. We have BibleGateway.com. We have instant messaging. We have texting. We have all these ways that we can communicate instantly in church, at work, at school. We can have all these things that we can communicate instantly. But just like Jesus, we must serve. We must figure out how to serve in this day. Because times have changed. The culture is changing. But the gospel has not. We read in the book of Acts about the Ethiopian who was reading from the book of Isaiah. And we know that Philip was sent out to meet him. They didn't have a text messaging conversation. Philip was sent to him. And he asked the Ethiopian, do you understand what it is you're reading? And the Ethiopian's response was, how can I, unless I have someone to explain it to me? So the question is, who are we serving? Who do we serve? Who was David serving when he slew Goliath? It's a pretty big job. Who was David serving when, after discovering that this beautiful woman he saw bathed on the rooftop belonged to one of his, he was the wife of one of his mighty men? Uriah was a mighty man. If you look in 2 Chronicles, or 1 Chronicles, 1 Chronicles 11, it lists the mighty men of David. Uriah is listed in that group. That meant Uriah fought for David. They were close buddies in battle. He asked, who is that woman's? It's Uriah's wife. And he summoned to have her brought to him. And we know what happened. Who was David serving then? There's lots of examples of when we decide to serve. Sometimes we decide to serve ourselves. And sometimes, who cares? But a lot of times we decide we're going to serve others. Is it hard to serve? Is it scary sometimes to serve? Do you think that God will help us? I listen to Dave Ramsey on the radio sometimes, and he was talking about the pain of failure versus the pain of never trying. And he says the pain of never trying is harder to accept than the pain of failure. And he talked about the time he couldn't remember if he was 6 or 7 years old, but he was at the pool, and there were a bunch of kids jumping off the board, and he got up there, and he got scared, and he couldn't do it. So he came off, And of course, they were all mocking him and ridiculing him and telling him what a coward he was and what a baby he was. And he recalled going back to that pool about 4 or 5 years later. And he looked at it and he goes, "That's nothing. That board's not high." And I know my kids have talked about, you know, the elementary school where they went to school. When you're there, it's huge. But when you're after you've gone to high school, it's like the school is nothing. I'm going to embarrass Paul Viter here this morning because, you know, Paul has made great strides. I asked Paul several years ago to if he would teach the middle school, and he had to think about it, and he said yes, he would do it. And I told him, you know, I go, you just have to teach for a quarter. If you just teach for 3 months, that'd be great. After a year, we had to pry him out of there. Now, just recently, we had a change in the high school class. I asked Paul if Paul would help co-teach the high school. And Paul, I could see no on his face. But he had made a commitment, he said. He told me he'd made a commitment to himself to never just say no. He was going to think about things. And I approached him before class on Sunday morning. After class, before services, he came back and he asked me another two questions. So I could tell he was thinking about it. And I answered the questions for him, and after church, he said he would do it. He said he would do it. Was it uncomfortable? Was it scary? But he said yes. So part of our goal for this year is we want to learn how to serve, and to serve effectively, to think about how we serve, because we're all serving. Everybody here is serving. And many of you are serving in very great and wonderful ways. But many of us are not. So what do we do? What must we do? Well, I'm suggesting that first we reclaim evangelism. Evangelism is something that we need to be part of. It's commanded. Jesus didn't give us a choice. You know, there's many things that are optional in the Bible, and we argue about a lot of those things. But evangelism is not one of them. It's Jesus gave it as a great commission. A commission is a responsibility. It's not an omission. But too many times we try to participate in what is known as friendship evangelism. It was something big that came out, was this idea of if you befriend somebody and you become a good friend, they'll see what a great person you are and how different you are and how wonderful you are, and they'll want to know how you got to be that way. But it doesn't work. There are examples in the Bible, though, where this is shown to be something we should do. We should be friends, and we should evangelize our friends. 1 Peter 2:12 tells us that a Christian life is a powerful example to those around us. And we can see it when there's times of trouble. A Christian that has faith, that has confidence, that living the life that God instructs us to will come out okay. That is a powerful example. In that passage, 1 Peter 2, it says, "Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us." So even though it's living a good life is a good example, it also can draw fires because he talks about being accused. And also in 1 Peter 3:12, we're instructed how a woman who leads a faithful life can be a good example to an unbelieving husband. It says their wives in the same way submit yourselves to your own husbands, so that if any of them do not believe the word, they may be won over without words by the behavior of their wives when they see the purity and reverence of your lives. So we see there is a responsibility to live a good Christian life, but friendship evangelism does not always work. Because again, we remember as Philip went out to the Ethiopian, he had to explain it to him. The Ethiopian wanted someone to help him. And in Philemon 6, verse 6, it says that the sharing of your faith may become effective by the acknowledgement of every good thing which is in you in Christ Jesus. He talks about the sharing of our faith. I have to share my faith. I can't expect someone to get it through osmosis. I have to share my faith. And in Acts 18, verses 24 through 26, It says, "Now a certain Jew named Apollos, born at Alexandria, an eloquent man and mighty in the Scriptures, came to Ephesus. This man had been instructed in the way of the Lord, and being fervent in spirit, he spoke and taught accurately the things of the Lord, though he knew only the baptism of John. So he began to speak boldly in the synagogue. When Aquila and Priscilla heard him, they took him aside and explained to him the way of God more accurately." But the thing here is, he spoke boldly. We have to be bold. I mean, sometimes we have to take a chance. We can't always live in a safe way, because safety sometimes becomes complacency. So I would like for each of us to pray. To pray that God will lead us to a lost soul that we can help teach. You think God will send somebody to you? In a book called Hearts on Fire, Don Humphrey writes, "We are no longer fishers of men. We are keepers of the aquarium. And what we call growing is just swiping fish from each other's bowl." The church, a lot of times, is happy to accept members from other congregations. And when people move and they come, or they want to change around, or the one has a youth group and one doesn't, all those things are good, valid reasons. And I don't want to poo-poo any of them. But the point is, we are to be reaching lost souls. We are to be fishers of men. And this must become a priority in our lives. Through our service, we can reach the lost. Our service is to who? Our service should be to God. Our service should also be to our fellow man. And this plays out in different ways for each of us, because none of us are the same. None of us have the same kind of jobs. None of us have the same circumstances. We're all different ages. Some of us vapor lock and some of us don't. But it's different for all of us. And we have to look at our own lives, our own circumstances, our own situation, and see where we can serve. Because success comes from service. And there's so many examples in the Bible. In fact, on one of the young adult studies we're doing on Thursday nights, you know, it talks about, we talked about Joseph. And Joseph found ways to serve in the most extreme circumstances. And eventually it led him to be the number two man in Egypt. But it's different for each of us. And we need to focus on our own lives, on how we can best serve. So this is our plan, the leadership plan for 2011. And it requires courage, requires prayer, requires faith, and requires boldness. There's three more things I want to point out, and then the lesson is yours. There's a song by Casting Crowns. The words are written by Mark Hall. And the words go, "To know you is to never worry for my life. To know you is to never give in to compromise. And to know you is to want to tell the world about you, because I can't live without you. To know you is to hear your voice when you are calling. To know you is to catch my brother when he is falling. To know you is to feel the pain of the brokenhearted, because they can't live without you. And more than my next breath, more than life or death, all I'm reaching for, I live my life to know you more. I leave it all behind, you're all that satisfies. To know you is to want to know you more. To know you is to ache for more than ordinary. To know you is to look beyond the temporary. To know you is believing that you'll be enough, because there is no life without you. All this life could offer me could not compare to you, and I count it all as loss." In Joshua, the 24th chapter, Joshua is near the end of his life, and he's speaking to the nation, because they have a choice to make. And then starting in verse 13, he says, "I have given you a land for which you did not labor, and cities which you do not build, and you dwell in them. You eat of the vineyards and olive groves which you did not plant. Now, therefore, fear the Lord, serve him in sincerity and in truth, and put away the gods which your fathers served on the other side of the river and in Egypt. Serve the Lord. And if it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose for yourself this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Stephen Pressfield writes historical novels, and in a book he wrote called Killing Rommel, as the young men who had been trained to go out into the Sahara Desert and try and chase down the desert fox. One of the young lieutenant tells his friends, he says, all that's changed is we've switched from men of words to men of action. So who are you serving? Are you a man or a woman of words, or a man or a woman of action? Are you a fisher of men, or are you a keeper of the aquarium? If we can help you answer any of these questions, if we can assist you in anything, we ask that you would come down front while we sing the invitation song.